One thing we really didn't dive into, you alluded to, we'll get to it, so we might as well get to it here. This idea, and we talked about this a lot last year when it went from Flaherty to Neighbors retiring the number one, the number one. Dude, I love Abdul Carter. You know that. We're on record of saying that. How could you have the guts, and you know I want to use the other word, but I'm going to be nice now, to ask, imagine picking up the phone, or however they asked, Lawrence Taylor, you're asking to wear 56? Why on earth would you even think that that's a good idea? Why? I don't understand the mindset of these young players that think they want to come in and take. You imagine a Chicago Bull getting drafted, asking to wear number 23. You can ask Jordan. That's the equivalent here with LT.
Yeah.
It's one thing for Ray Flaherty and his family, and even that, I think, is pushing it. This is Lawrence Taylor. Are you out of your mind?
It's really not that far off from the Jordan comparison. I mean, Michael's the greatest basketball player of all time, and Lawrence Taylor is, for me, a top three football player of all time.
Right.
I mean, so I get it. I don't really have an issue with it, though, because of the way he went about it. Now, you know, it wasn't like he was really talking through the media. He reached out to whether it was his camp or him, reached out to Lawrence Taylor, and Lawrence Taylor had one of two options. Nah, I'm passing, or, you know what, young buck, I think you're good enough, I'd be honored. And I, by no means, would apply an ounce of pressure for him to say that he should have taken it. I got no problem. I mean, that's Lawrence's prerogative. He did not accept it. But I thought then Abdul Carter was very gracious in how he responded to Lawrence's turning down of the offer. And the other thing, too, and I have not heard anybody say this, but I think it's partly attributable to this. Like, so the number 11 at Penn State, as you know, has been passed down forever and ever and ever, and it's like they're great. So I think maybe in his mind, again, you know, he spent a bunch of years at State College. It's part of his work. It's like natural. It's normalized. Like, all right, well, the best player generally wears number 11. Now, of course, he knows that there's only one Lawrence Taylor, I would imagine. But I don't think it was ego-driven or not an ounce of maliciousness, obviously. I just think it was a young man who was supremely confident, and he asked the ask, and he got sitting and it was rebuffed, and he said, okay, we're good. I'm going to find something else.
Understood.
What's the problem?
I think even asking is disrespectful.
Why?
Go to Mitchell and Ness and buy a 56 Lawrence Taylor throwback jersey, and you can respect him and honor him that way. Go make your own legacy. I'm glad LT said it the way that he did, because this is getting out of control now. By the way, we like to knock Aaron Rodgers, a guy who won a Super Bowl and won four MVPs, and if anybody could ask or have a number unretired, he's at least earned it. Mm. What did he say when he first got here, when he was asked about the number 12?
Well, by the way, Joe Namath told me that he gave that story. It was here. Joe said, I gave him permission.
And
he said, I'm not interested.
Yeah, because he gets it. No, that's Joe Namath's legacy that he built. I'll wear a different number. There's a reason why we retire these numbers. It can't just be now common practice to unretire. And that's what we're doing. Malik Neighbors did it. I didn't like it then. I don't like the idea that even Warren Moon, although it was technically a different, you know, it's the same franchise, but the Houston Oilers are different than the Tennessee Titans. But still, you're going to ask Warren Moon, he should feel pressure to unretire his number. It happened with the Mets' pursuit potentially of Shohei Ohtani.
And number 17, with the Hernandez stuff.
Or maybe not even Ohtani. It was, yes, it was about Ohtani, but it was also,
Was it Yamamoto?
What if he wanted to wear 18 or something?
Keith was turned off when I remember seeing that live when Gary asked him in the booth. He's like,
I think it was for Ohtani. Yeah, exactly right. But
that's his brother. That's fine.
All right, but why are we even, like, there's a reason why the numbers are retired. So we're going to get to a point where some young Yankee fans are going to be like, oh, I love Derek Jeter. Maybe he can unretire number two. Wear your own number. That was Jeter's number. Malik Neighbors should wear his own number. Well, but Abdul Carter's going to say Micah Parsons. Abdul Carter should wear his own number.
I get that aspect of it. I do. I just don't think it's not offensive to me. Like, to me, it's partially born out of reverence. It's also part of, you know, selfishness. Like, it's my number, even though he didn't wear 56 at Penn State. But in the instances of, like, a Neighbors or some others. So, like, were you the kind of, go back to uniform night.
Yeah.
When we got our uniform.
I loved it.
Oh.
Picking the number out was special.
Well, I'm going to go there. So think about this. Whatever year. But for us, probably like a 1980-something Chevy with the hood or the trunk open and the coach with a brown bag or in a box,
whatever.
Green
sack of the baseball equipment.
From Vietnam and all. basketball probability. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, right, 100%. Right. My dad had those with didn't fight none, but he had the basketball for the basketball bag. Anyway, when you got those jerseys, now if you're on like a club team, it's all digitalized. All right, get the number in. And generally, if you stay with the same club team, you have the same number for the same amount of years. Like Colts had 23 for 3 years for his club team in a row. Right. It's taken, right? And that's fine because he loves it. But I was attached to numbers. Like I was a kid who, if I feel like if I didn't have my number, I didn't feel right. I remember one Christmas I got a big, very big, but it was a gold pendant with my number from my parents for Christmas, my senior year of high school. My number meant a lot. And numbers mean a lot to some people. Like, it really does. So as long as they do it the right way.
I know, but...
And then they don't criticize the person if they're turned down. What's the problem?
I don't mind, Soto giving Beatty a car to get his number 22. I get that. When the number is retired, I think it's crossing a line of disrespect. Now, I'm not saying Abdul Carter was disrespectful in the way that he handled it.
Mm-hmm.
I think just the idea of even have the gall to ask... Lawrence freaking Taylor.
But how is it disrespectful when it's born out of reverence?
Because you're putting...
Because you're putting him in a tough spot, yes, that's what you mean?
You shouldn't have to... Now, right. Now LT handled it like LT would.
Okay.
No, go make your own.
I got that part because, like, if the player... If LT communicates it differently, which he didn't, he did a good job, right? Maybe LT gets knocked around by some, like, their first take or some other show debating. Oh, you see what LT said? And maybe it would get hijacked and it would make LT look bad.
Right.
So maybe you put him in a rough spot. That I understand. But, by the way, I'm not pushing back. I know what you're saying. And fundamentally, a big part of me does agree. But as long as it's done properly and there's no jagged edges, I really didn't have an issue with it.
And it's not just specific to Abdul Carter. I'm not trying to pick on him. It's just a pattern now that's happening here. There are ways to honor legends of the past. Wear their throwback jersey to a game. There's multiple ones. Ask Lawrence Taylor for a game-used jersey. Well, he probably doesn't have any memorabilia anymore, but whatever. You know what I'm saying? Like, there are ways to honor him without asking him to unretire. The whole honor of retiring a number is because you're saying that no one will ever wear this number again because of what this player meant to our franchise.
Correct. But if the player is still alive to have a say in that, that's where we disagree. God forbid, I know in the case with Neighbors, Flaherty's family was able to do that. But, like, if Lawrence Taylor was no longer with us and the Giants said, yeah, you know what, I don't think LT would have much of an issue, that to me is disrespectful toward Lawrence Taylor's legacy. Like, it's got to be up to the person whose actual number it was. Let me give you an example. Let's say 10, 15 years from now, how many more numbers do you think are going to be available for Yankees to actually wear?
Yeah, well,
okay. So let's say Lombard. Let's say Lombard is coming up, not now, but coming up in 10 years, and he's an absolute superstar, and he's the chosen one. He's it. And he wants to wear... He doesn't want to wear number 74.
Right.
He doesn't want to wear number 65. Like, you tell me it's disrespectful if he were to ask, hey, I grew up, I wore number 8, again, not that the Yankees should unretire Yogi's number 8, but I don't think it's disrespectful is all I'm saying.
Okay, fair enough. BT and Sal on the fan, 888-808-1019. Back to the calls. We got some Knicks calls as well. Steve is in Flushing, New York. What's up, Steve?
Guys, hey, how you doing?
Good.
Hey, Steve.
Good. I called, I guess there's a few games left in the regular season, talking about just how the Knicks are constructed as a team. And based on how they're constructed, how far you had a debate or how far you think they're going to go. You know, are they going to be a second-round exit team? I'm going to be honest with you. You know, they won the game, but, that's a game where, 7-8 times out of 10, the way things are going in the second half, they probably blow that game and we're tied 2-2. But honestly, the Pistons, there were just so many red flags in that game that made me say, even if you beat Detroit this series in this round, which you probably will, they're no match for the Celtics. I mean, there's no consistency. They just play ISO ball all the time. Outside of Brunson and Cat, who are, amazing players, there's a huge, huge chasm and drop off from the third and the fourth and the fifth option for this team on offense. And the Celtics have like six guys they can rely on every night, basically to score, which the Knicks just don't have. And
I
brought up the point with DiVincenzo. The DiVincenzo point to me, Mikal Bridges would do nothing. I know he had two big threes at the end there, but,
he's also playing.
Nothing. He shows up.
That's not true. Yeah. He's also playing defense. He's a better offensive player than DiVincenzo. I'm not trying to disparage DiVincenzo.
No.
But He is. Mikal Bridges.
You think he's a look at his stats?
No, I don't need to watch the Steve, watch the game.
Wait, who's he saying? He's saying that Bridges is better than DiVincenzo?
He's saying DiVincenzo's better.
Offensively?
Yeah, or I guess.
Honestly, I would say that, and I'm a big Devo fan, I would say that Bridges probably is better offensively.
Especially when
he's definitely better defensively.
Especially when he's clicking. We haven't even seen the best of Bridges yet. The Knicks have options, and that's the difference. And by the way, you might be right about there in comparison to the Celtics. Hopefully we get a chance to find out, and then we'll know for sure. What I think the Celtics do better than anybody else is their role players are extremely consistent and efficient.
Yeah.
Whereas the Knicks, I don't want to say role players, but OG and Bridges fluctuate too much.
You can watch a half hour and not hear their name, it seems, sometimes.
First half, awful. Second half, all of a sudden hitting big shots.
Yep.
If that leveled out a little bit from either one to be the third piece to complement Jalen and Kat, and you know what you're getting from Josh Hart for the most part? He's consistent. OG Anunoby to me has had a disappointing postseason so far.
I was just thinking about him. Go ahead. He was in my mind too.
Yeah, because he should be that third. He looks like he's afraid to shoot. I don't know what is it. Maybe he's still finding out what his role is with the emergence of Bridges being more impactful. I don't know, but OG Anunoby was a force last year before getting hurt.
He was.
He can be a force, and it's like he's taken a back seat for some reason. That can't happen. Either Bridges or Anunoby needs to be that third consistent presence behind Kat and Brunson. But I think the Celtics' role players are better, which makes them a better team. They were the champions. It's no knock in saying they're better than the Knicks. We're going to see. Hopefully, we get a chance to see what happens when they go head-to-head in the playoffs.
Well, not only are their role players better, their star players better.
Bingo.
Their star tandem is better. So you go top of the spectrum, the other end of the depth. I mean, I don't know. Again, Mazzulla's really good. He's got a championship. Tom Thibodeau doesn't. Even though I've been down on Tom Thibodeau, I'm going to give them or him a little bit more respect and even though Mazzulla's working his way past him. Either way, the Celtics are a better team. I think we all know that. But the thing about OG, too, because I was thinking about him as well. You know, everything about OG Anunoby sounds really good and really appealing, and he is very good. You know, he's a banger from the corner, 40%. He's a demon on defense. He's strong. But then you watch him, and sometimes he looks like an inferior athlete. Like, he doesn't jump out of the gym. He never puts anybody on skates with his handles.
Well, remember last year I was saying that he's a one-dimensional offensive player.
He proved you wrong a little bit, though. He started going
correct.
To the rim.
Last year he did a little bit, but now this year specifically he opened up his game. But where is it? Why
not?
You know you watch a consistent player. Cade Cunningham, nobody questions what he's going to do on any given night because he does it every single night. Jalen Brunson, you know what his game is. You know what Karl Anthony Towns' game is. What is Anunoby? Is he a guy who's
a 3-and-D guy.
Okay.
That's the answer.
Well, then do that and do it to a high level. How many nights are you going to take the offer from downtown? That can't happen. He's got to knock down those threes. If OG is not hitting the three in the corner, see, to me, it's nice that he added another level to his game.
Mm-hmm.
But especially.
Talk about last year when he started going to the rim?
Well, he did that out of necessity last year because they were depleted. This year, he did it a little bit more, too. They were talking, he might have done it even in game one. I forget the exact game. Maybe it was game two, whatever. But he's shown that he can put the ball on the floor a little bit more and get to the rim.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, the Knicks don't need that. They have that with other guys. They need him to spot up in the corner and knock down the threes. That when he has a good opportunity, he's got to hit those shots. He's been too inconsistent and a little too trepid for me to in this series, even though they should get past the Pistons without it. To beat the Celtics, they're going to need the best of OG Anunoby.
Yeah, they both have flaws. I mean, Bridges is sublime from mid-range. I mean, once he gets to his spot, like foul line, extended baseline, I'm talking about not a three, just a little mid-ranger, he is money. But we've seen many deficiencies creep into his game, and we've dissected them. He's just long stretches. He's invisible. Whatever. Sometimes he's very erratic from downtown. He's a little streaky. And then OG, on paper, corner guy, good defender, strong body. But then you look at his weaknesses. Again, I don't think he puts it on the floor well enough at all. Didn't bother me as last year, maybe because DiVincenzo was putting it on the floor and Hart was doing it a little bit more. And Brunson and Hartenstein was a very adept passer. And he was playing high post and he was doing some good stuff. But the more I watch this team, like, OG is more limited than I thought. And that's why I've said for a while that I think there's a big move coming this offseason. Now, if they ever traded Mikal Bridges, they would get absolutely skewered. You give up five first-round picks. I think they're going to retain him. I think they're going to try to trade OG Anunoby. I do.
Mike is in North Plainfield, New Jersey. What's up, Mike?
Yeah, guys. I had this brilliant idea about the retired number. All right. My brilliant ideas don't always work. 50 years ago, I thought getting married was a brilliant idea. But you go with LVI.
Mike, you got to shut the radio off in the background and listen to us.
Yeah, Mikey.
Go ahead. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, Mike. Yeah, I got to let you go. We can't hear that. We appreciate you taking the time to call. It's got to be radio off in the
LVI,
background.
Was that an acronym for something about jerseys? Or is that just the Roman numeral? I don't even know what he's saying.
No, LVI, I would have liked. Do you know his point, Hoff? Did he explain his point to you before he got on the air about what he was going to call about?
No, he didn't.
Okay. And it's just okay. Yeah, you want to talk to the kids out here?
You're up next.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see what he wanted to say here about the retired numbers. I don't know what LVI would stand for.
I thought it was an acronym, but I'm thinking about there's no jerseys, there's no retired. It's not like an R or a J. So LVI, maybe he's a former math teacher.
Yeah,
I don't know.
And maybe he was coming up with some kind of plan to where you can honor the player and have their number retired, but it can be brought back in the right. I don't know. To me, if it's retired, it's retired. If not, just say, hey, we're gonna. You know, put a plaque up with your name on it and say that you did great things for us and be in the team's Hall of Fame, but anybody could wear the number. Also, I mean, a part of me gives Carter credit for wanting to wear 56.
Absolutely.
But I don't think he'd be doing himself any favors. I don't know if he fully understands the magnitude of what Lawrence Taylor was.
He can't because he didn't see him play a snap.
So that's the point.
He can't.
You can watch all the film that you want.
Yeah.
But you don't understand what you're doing to yourself. There's no way... I don't care how great you are, you'll never live up to the number 56.
No, and you think about the way the history and the past of the NFL is, you know, pushed out there. Yeah, of course, when you see the Giants Super Bowls, whether it's the last two with Eli or the two before that, obviously you see a lot of, you know, Carl and, of course, Lawrence all over the place. But you generally see quarterbacks, like you see a lot of Montana and you see a lot of Rodgers and you see, you know, Eli's some big throws. You don't really see a ton of, I'm talking like the NFL Network and... You don't see a lot of Lawrence Taylor stuff anymore. You don't see a series of defensive highlights. You just don't see that. So there's no way for the young man to possibly have a sense of just how good Lawrence Taylor was. He walked into the building, and he saw the championships. He saw some Lawrence Taylor stuff. I'm sure he's well-versed on what he accomplished. But if you didn't see Lawrence Taylor play football with your own eyes, there's nobody that is alive or a film that you can watch or a clip on social media that will justify how unstoppable Lawrence Taylor is. One of the two or three best of all time in any position.
Dove cracked the code with the LVI.
Did he?
Roman numeral 56.
Oh. What are we, idiots? I mean,
well, yeah, I know.
Just... Good God almighty. How do we not get...
Well, LVI, it's... Well, I mean, yeah. Wait,
were you getting confused on what the L was?
Or no,
the M100 is the D500?
No, I was with you thinking... I don't know what the hell he's talking about. I'm thinking acronym more so than anything else. I'm not thinking Roman numeral.
At least I said it, but yes, I didn't connect it.
But Dove did put that together. There you go.
Actually, I did. He stole it from me.
Oh, hot. Look at you!
I asked him to get the information to you.
Oh, all right. Now we get a little battle behind the glass.
Yeah, he's making funny jokes. Now he's stealing my information. I don't like this. Right.
Good job, though, cracking that code eventually, the Boldy. However, we got it done. All right, we'll get back to the calls on the other side. Imagine players wearing Roman numeral numbers. I don't think that would fly.
Well,
too.
I mean, no, but why not? If you want to do it next to his name. I mean, Abdul Carter the 56th. Hey, think about that. Like Carter. Like, think about this. If there's three or four generations of people, you see the one and then the V to signify the number four. So maybe he can just say he's the 56th Abdul Carter.
Oh, now you really lost me. BT and Sal on the fan.
It made sense, even though it's probably not very plausible.
BT and Sal on the fan.
Who
by the way,
is that?
Belinda Carlisle.
No, it's not. Who is that's not Wilson Phillips. Who was that?
Wilson Phillips?
I don't think it was.
Oh.
No, I don't think so. Who sings that song? Do you know?
Debbie Gibson.
The Vinyls. No.
The Vinyls.
Oh, Dove did say it. Wait, how do you spell it? D-A?
D-I.
D-I, the Vinyls. Okay, not familiar.
Oh, one word?
Yeah,
I thought like...
Or is it D-A?
Yeah, right.
Space Vinyls.
Like the Brat.
The Vinyls.
The Brat, D-A...
It's more like a D-A. Not a duh.
D-Vinyls, okay.
D-Vinyls.
Short eye.
Either way, Taco Frank texted me reminding Clint Frazier did ask for number...
He did.
Did ask for number seven.
Yes, he did.
I mean, that is just...
No, he didn't. He denied it.
No, what do you mean he denied it? I thought
that story came out and it was denied.
No, I thought that was accurate, that he said he would like to wear number seven.
I actually, now that I think about this, because they just said on a broadcast recently, I think you're right. It was a narrative around him as a young, a bit of an egotistical player.
Yeah.
But it was refuted. And by the way, why, I mean, What's wrong with the Wilson Phillips choice? Earl's texting us, like I said, something from three decades before. I thought that was a pretty good guess.
I mean, yes. I wouldn't know the difference.
Do you remember Wilson Phillips?
Yes.
I love the lead singer. Wait, where do I know? Blonde, short hair.
I feel I know her, though, more so from a parody that... Was it Chris Farley that...
Did they do something on SNL?
I don't know. Am I getting her mixed up with something? Let me just make
it
sure.
It could be.
What did...
The next text from Hurley, by the way. Where is the focus on this segment? Wilson, that's the next text
Wilson
he's going
to
show
us. I'm trying to see.
See the lead singer with blonde hair?
I think there was a... Yeah, I think that there was a parody on SNL about it, but I'm not 100% sure. Yeah. Either way, but I thought it was a fun guest. BT and Sal, the fan, 888-808-1019, the number to call. Spiro is calling from the Bronx about the Knicks. What's up, Spiro?
What's going on, boys? How's everything today?
Pretty good. How you feeling, man? What's happening?
Good. I want to bring up that point where you guys brought up about the challenge with Bickerstaff.
Yeah.
Which I would definitely not have called one in the beginning, but that's neither here nor there. When a caller yesterday called up and said they can't challenge that call at the end because there's no foul called. So he can't challenge he said that the coach, Bickerstaff, cannot challenge that call because there was no foul called on it. So how can you challenge a no foul?
You can't challenge. Well, I'm confused. Why can't you challenge a foul that a call that was not called a foul? What is that? Is that something new?
I'm asking you. I'm saying that.
I thought they could have challenged it.
How do you call something they didn't see a foul call?
No. You could also challenge a play that was not called a foul to see if there should have been a foul.
All right. That I don't know about, but that's what the caller called. So I wanted to bring that part up.
Yeah, and thank you for the call, Spiro. It's not just about, and now I'm confused, but it's not just about, a foul was called. I'm going to challenge that.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Did you hear Beningo over the weekend? I got in the car. I heard him railing about instant replay. Just thought about that.
Nobody's right.
No, I know. But how do we survive all these years, 50 years with no replay? I mean, he's right.
You hold on, Hoff. Say this.
Rule number 14, coaches challenge.
Here we go.
Not a any non-call is not a challengeable event.
Yeah, but what they're saying in the 2-minute review is that they should have called a foul. Which are two separate things.
Fantastic.
Wait a second, though. You're telling me that you cannot challenge a call that you believe your player was fouled on?
Right, because if they didn't call it on the court.
So you can only challenge a foul call, and you only get one challenge.
Or out of bounds, stuff like that, too.
But you
have to have a call. You can't challenge a non-call.
That makes no sense whatsoever.
It doesn't make sense, but there's always going to be an element of subjectivity with these fouls anyway. Think about the rule of verticality, guys going straight up in the air.
Right.
Like, theoretically, you could touch the ceiling. But, like, maybe one officiating crew says, the arms are coming slightly forward, and they don't call it. And you're like, well, I want to challenge it. You can't. I think that you should be able to, but you can't.
So because there was no foul called on that final play, it wouldn't have been challengeable anyway.
He could have had five challenges in his pocket.
Yeah.
But it's stupid.
It's ignoring
technology.
What was Joe ripping on? Just replay in general?
I don't think he was. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got like mid. I was going to get gas before.
But this was before the Knicks.
Yes.
Okay.
And he was still griping about something.
So the point
not
is,
wrong.
It's even worse. I didn't even realize that, honestly. I guess you're just watching the game, you're thinking, you're seeing these guys ask for challenges left and right.
I know.
So most of it, all of it, is going to be on whether a foul is called and they don't believe that he was fouled. How could it not be the other way? So let's just say, hypothetically, or whatever, this last play with Hardaway, Brunson takes it to the rim, he gets punched in the face, kneed in the groin, no whistle is called. You can't challenge that?
I think that would be... I know you give it a good example there, trying to come up with something wacky, which I appreciate.
But
specific to that... Anything above the neck is obviously like flagrant one, flagrant two material. Now, I could be wrong, but I believe that you can call for the refs to challenge to see if there was anything above the head. But same situation, Brunson drives to the rim
Hardaway
and he's clocked with a...
kind of on the head a little bit.
Who was this now, Hardaway?
Yesterday a little bit where Hart was getting on his...
But it's got to be deemed like intentional, forcible.
Yeah, but if they don't call a foul to begin with, how are they supposed to check to see if it's a flagrant one or two?
Yeah, who knows
what
these rules are. The point is, if you're going to have replay, the point of replay is to get the calls right.
Sure.
How can you then say, we're only going to be able to challenge once, unless you get it right, only foul calls?
I'm saying it's wildly inconsistent. I'm with you on this.
It's one of the dumbest things I've ever heard.
Yeah, but there's also elements in the NFL, certain things that you cannot review and challenge, and it's stupidity. And,
which
and,
is why I just wouldn't have replayed it beginning.
And baseball, too. Dude, the triple play the other day in the Mets game. Right. I mean, it was embarrassing.
Right.
The fact that the ball legitimately hopped on the ground, but they called it a line drive out. And you in the replay, it shows it touched the dirt, but you can't review that.
Also, by the way, back to the point about the caller, it still does not excuse the awful decision for Bickerstaff to challenge. Just because
I agree. 5 minutes into a game?
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense because it could have been gone the other way where a foul call was that you wanted.
All right, scale of 1 to 10 here.
Now, who is that?
That's China Phillips now.
Now, who's China Phillips?
From Wilson Phillips.
Wait a second.
What?
Wilson Phillips is not an individual?
No, it's a group. It's three of them.
So there is no Wilson Phillips.
Yeah,
no,
like, I think there's two Wilsons and one Phillips, or two Phillips and one Wilson.
I'm not even sure. But what do you think? I mean, as an older woman, I mean, that's,
how old is she? Looks very good.
She's held up pretty well, right?
Yeah.
Good to see that. You know, sometimes like you kind of like, I used to like that, or no.
Okay,
my choice back then was on the money.
Like, there's one Wade Phillips, right?
I'm sure there's a bunch of Wade Phillips in the world.
Saying, like, the one that we know, Wade.
Yeah,
Phillips.
Wade Bum Phillips.
Yeah.
Defensive coordinator. Yeah, I would think so. Sure.
Wilson Phillips is a group of people.
Correct.
Yes.
And by the way, Leonard Skinner also is a group, not a person.
That I knew.
That's true. Look at you, Tom. I mean, this guy's been on
For
top
some
of this
reason,
game.
That one I knew. Wilson
Did you
Phillips,
really know? You knew that about Leonard Skinner?
I thought Wilson That's Phillips impressive. was the lead singer.
Now it's China Phillips, Wendy Wilson, and Carney Wilson.
I mean, if it was up to me, she's the only one that really should have been in the band, actually. You know, so it really should have been just her.
Speaking of, it's not really hip-hop, Wilson Phillips. But anyway, Jimmy is in Warren County, wants to talk about Shador Sanders' hip-hop career. What's up, Jimmy?
BT and Sal, what's going on, fellas?
Hey, Jim.
Can I be honest with you? And the reason why I'm telling you this is because he made a clip after he got drafted to put a stamp on this for me. The rapping thing and the timing of him dropping that song played a... It was a major red flag amongst a sea of red flags. I truly believe it. Did you guys see the clip after he got drafted with his brother?
No, I did not.
His brother says something to him, and he goes, "I'm not rapping anymore, man." And I'm like, I was thinking the whole time, like, why is he, with his social media presence, with the money, rapping is a passionate thing. You're about to be the face of the franchise. Yeah. And quarterback him, he came right off Jimmy's board as soon as I heard that song. So please go, fellas.
I haven't even heard the song.
Right off Jimmy's board. Right off my board. I went home and took him right off the board, fellas. Right off the board.
Thank you, Jimmy. That is great stuff. Appreciate the call. He came right off Jimmy's board after the rap. I didn't see it. I did see a bunch of stuff. First of all, I felt bad, the video that was out there. Although the NFL put one. First you had the prank call, and then you had Sanders' reaction to the prank
Deion's
call.
Deion's or Shador's?
No, Shador. Well, yeah. the whole.
Even Deion's reaction when the Saints didn't take him at 9.
Yeah, they were like, I guess someone was messing with you. That was tough to watch.
Yeah, I hate that.
I did see something afterward, them celebrating when he did get selected. I don't know if I saw a rap thing, but I think that plays to the point about a lack of passion for being an NFL quarterback, where it's about everything else with Shador. Yeah, I'll just go out there and play football like I played football at college. It's different in the NFL.
It is. Well,
right off Jimmy's board.
Yeah, I know. Jimmy the GM there. As much as we talked about Sanders, we didn't even really talk about, if he dropped this long, number fifth round, why didn't the Jets or Giants take him?
Yeah.
Honestly.
Well, I know you didn't want him regardless.
I wouldn't have minded him at 5. If the Jets took him in the 5th round, I would be like, there you go.
You know, the problem with that is it overshadows everything.
Meaning his draft status.
Sanders is a lightning rod.
Is he, though?
He's the story of the draft.
Well, just because Mel Kiper couldn't get his name out of his mouth.
No.
I mean, but who else?
Everybody. He's the main talking point from this draft.
But did he generate all those talking points, or was it just people who didn't have good producers to tell him what else to talk about? Let's face it. One thing that I've learned, I'm not going to name names, but a lot of people who talk about a lot of things focus on one thing because they really don't know nearly as much as they present to the public. So if you're on a big show, all right, and you're getting paid a ton of money to deliver strong opinions, and you don't know anything about the NFL draft, which most of these people don't, the low-hanging fruit is to just talk about Shador Sanders every day.
Right.
So I know that Sanders didn't help his cause. I get that. The backwards hats, the presentation, going to turn off some older GMs. All right. The rap, the whatever. But I don't know what Sanders did really, at least publicly, in the last 5 weeks for this drop to happen. Can anybody tell me?
But
did he get caught with coke?
No.
Did he get into an accident? Did he have three strippers and an eight ball? I mean, what did he do?
But that's to the point of why it's such a story, is because the guy went from being a surefire first rounder, if not the second pick overall, and being by most people's accounts prior to the meetings and stuff, the second best quarterback, he went in the fifth round.
But I'm talking about more before the drop. Right. Like, the talking
why
point.
Why he was such a big.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think it was because of that, where people.
Because of what, though? Because of his Deion's son?
No, people expecting him to be one thing and turning out to be another.
Well, I mean, that was a pretty quick flip, because for a lot of us, we thought he was going to go to the Giants.
That's what I'm
whether
saying.
Or not we agreed with it.
We didn't even think the Giants would have a chance to take him at one point.
That was a debate, but that's what I'm asking. For the Giants, remember, he wore Giants cleats. He was throwing the ball around with Malik Nabers. We thought, all right. I mean, I don't love him at three for the Giants, but the Giants might. That's what matters. How did he go from there to here?
To the fifth
round.
Nothing's
happened publicly.
Right.
I think it was an entitlement behind closed doors. And then the more light that got pumped into the story, it got hijacked a bit. I don't think we're talking about a bad kid. Johnny Manziel was doing basically heroin.
Right, but BT,
and they drafted him.
When I say lightning rod, I don't mean bad kid or problem. I mean talking point.
I know you mean that, but I think a lot of other people have kind of taken that and think that he's a bad kid.
No, okay. Well,
he might be a little distracted.
I wasn't thinking that, but as it pertains to, let's say, the Jets taking him in round four, he would be the entire. We'd be leading the show today with Shedeur Sanders and the Jets.
We would.
Not the Knicks, not even the Giants. It would be all about Shedeur.
But it doesn't mean it would be a problem.
No.
Yeah, I mean,
no,
we definitely would have led with it for sure.
But that's a different story. So it wouldn't be a problem, but the Jets, who are saying, speak softly here.
Yeah.
Carry the big
change
stick.
The messaging.
Yeah.
What about the Giants?
If you draft Shedeur, that goes out the window.
Fair
it's
enough.
All about Shedeur, and then there's the overwhelming pressure. When are we going to see him?
Mm-hmm.
For the Giants, I think it would have been a little bit different because of their glaring need for a quarterback, and because we just got used to the idea that they might be interested in him.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't have been opposed to it. I think them trading up to get Dart was the end of Sanders. It wasn't that.
I would have gotten both of them. I mean, think about this.
I mean,
unconventional, sure, but the more darts you throw at the quarterback board, the greater possibility you have of landing a bullseye.
Like Cleveland.
Like Cleveland's doing this, and others. The Patriots back in the day when they had Brady and Garoppolo and Brissett. Now, Garoppolo obviously better than Brissett. Brissett a backup. Garoppolo's not even that great anyway. But I conceptually, that's not a bad thing. And maybe it's different because it's New York, and maybe it's different because it's Sanders. But, like, I don't know. If you haven't had a quarterback since the end of Eli's prime, maybe the best way, again, I think Dart's a fine pick, but I would have had a problem if they would have taken him as well, strength in numbers.
I think Cleveland's a little bit of a mess. They took Gabriel and then took Sanders just because it's like, geez, it's the fifth round here. The value at this position, which is such a premium, we have to take him.
Yep.
So I would have understood it to a certain extent if either team did it, but I think Cleveland's got a little bit of a mess on their hands. Imagine the Giants, who already have Russell Wilson and Jameis Winston and trading up for Dart, and they're going to take another quarterback, one that they passed up on multiple times in the fourth round. Or
you think Shador's better than Tommy DeVito? More talent? I do. I definitely do.
Probably.
Okay, yeah. I think most people do. That I mean, we'll be right, but I think most of us do.
I don't know, because I haven't seen it yet. I think there's a good chance Shedeur Sanders could be a total flop in the NFL.
True, and there's a good chance that Tommy DeVito's out of the NFL in a year or two, right? So my point is, like, we don't know what Sanders' ceiling is. I think we have a better sense of what DeVito's is, with all due respect.
Sorry, BT. The potential of Sanders is worth more than Tommy DeVito.
Intriguing, yes. Intriguing enough for me. And I don't even know if the Giants or Jets contemplated it at all. Like, if you're sitting in any war room, but specific our two teams' war room, how the hell by, like, late round three, do you not start looking around the room and saying, guys, I mean, you know, it might not be the perfect prospect here, but he's still here. He's going to be here when we pick in the fourth round. And then when you get to the fourth round, guys, he's still here. How do we not trade up a few spots or make a move and pick him in round five? Do you think the Jets or the Giants even got there? If they didn't, and I'm not just trying to bang unfairly on the Jets and the Giants, but if that wasn't at least said out loud, then that is negligent on the part of the Jets and the Giants. They got to at least bring it up.
I would think it was at least from the Jets' perspective. I don't know about the Giants.
Call of the day with Brendan Tierney and Sal Licata on The Fan.
Yorktown. What's up, Liam?
It's been really hard watching the Giants be mismanaged for the last decade, so that's why it's really exciting to see the Giants have the best draft of any team in the NFL this year, and it's because they drafted Jaxson Dart. I mean, Dart was the hot chick at the party, and the Giants went home with her at the end of the night. And you know, everybody would have wanted some, but, you know, and you know, we don't. It doesn't really matter about the future. We're just trying. The Giants got the hot chick at the party, and it's really awesome. And we can bask in that glory.
Sometimes the hot
bit,
chick has an STD. You never know.
Oh, jeez.
You never know.
BT and Sal back on the fan. 888-808-1019 is the number to call. Been fun on the phone so far.
Yep.
Really a fast show. Good to be back to work here. Fun with you guys. All right, let's get to the phones here, BT, because there were a bunch holding. I want to try to get everybody in. 888-808-1019 is the number to call. Don is in Tampa, Florida. What's up, Don?
Hey, guys. First off, definitely thoughts and prayers to you, Sal, for your brother-in-law. Really sorry to hear that, man.
Thank you, Don. We really appreciate that. Thank you.
No doubt. So I've called you guys before about really being critical regarding the Giants' whole process regarding the draft. I was the one that called upset about they didn't draft Joe Milton last year. But I got to be fair, I feel like they really crushed it and nailed it this year. Obviously, Carter, by the way, definitely took some stones for him to come out and ask for 56. I know you guys already talked about that, but that he should be a stud, and he definitely is acting like he should be. The two things that I wanted to bring up that I think I'm actually disagreement with both of you guys on is regarding Dart. And by the way, I do love the Scadabo pick and even the tackle from Purdue. I think all three of them have really legit shots of making a difference. So, but BT, when you were talking about how you were a little confused or you thought the Giants' thought process was a little off with their quarterback selection, to me, it's really not that hard to just understand that, you know, they might have liked Ward first. They did what they could to try to get him. They couldn't get him. And Dart could have been the second quarterback, right? I think it's okay to like two quarterbacks in the same draft. Dart could have been the second guy on their list, and they wanted to make sure they got him, so they did what they needed to do. He could have potentially been there if he fell to him at 34, but they didn't give up very much to trade up, and they went and they got him, and I think we got to give him credit for that. We don't know what he's going to be, of course, but I think that's okay. I don't view that as a negative.
That's proactive.
And even you,
Donnie, I don't really disagree. I think it was a proactive move by the Giants, and you're right. We're not going to attach a definitive grade to it yet. We got to see if he could play, and I think that he could. I was just, you know, again, this is, you know, not to keep going back to this, but I want everybody to understand what I'm saying. You know, I just wasn't sure that the Giants' plan in their own minds was identifiable as some people think it may have been. Now, sometimes you have to react, and sometimes what you think Monday is different than what you do on Tuesday. And I think there was a little bit of that based on the trail of quarterback, you know, innuendos that have been around the Giants now for 5-6 months, basically.
Yeah. I liked what they did identifying, you know, the quarterback that they liked outside of Cam Ward, I'm assuming, going up, making sure that they get him as opposed to waiting for him to fall to them with that first round and with the first pick of the second round. Chris is in Brick, New Jersey. What's up, Chris?
Hey, what's happening, gentlemen? Just wanted to comment on the Jets and the draft, but first I wanted to just throw a thank you to you guys and the station. We won the PGA National trip a couple months ago.
Wow.
And we went over the weekend. Unbelievable, man. Unbelievable.
How'd you hit them?
Good for you.
How many balls you hit?
I mean, the Surfside's cracked open at about 10:30, and I think they stopped at about 4:30 the next morning.
Look
boys.
At so you.
4:30 the next morning. That's a Hall of Fame night right there. Great. Awesome, dude.
Yeah, and just with the Jets, man. I like the draft. It feels different, not getting overly pissed off or overly excited, but I think that's a good thing. I think they're showing Fields. They're giving him a shot. I don't know that he's going to be great, but if he's not, then hopefully they're in a spot to draft one of these kids next year. And we got on paper, young, good offensive line, and, you know, just hopeful this time.
Chris, brick by brick, buddy.
There we go.
That's what you're saying. Brick by brick.
Thank you for the call, Chris.
Yeah, happy you guys enjoy the trip, too. That's what you had it. Brick by brick. Just grow it out there. Be able to run the ball a little bit. Protect your quarterback. Get a tight end. Something they never had. I love what the Jets
did. And we'll see. We'll evaluate them in year one. And we'll evaluate the Giants, Joe Shane, Brian Dable, year four. Steve is in Caldwell. What's up, Steve?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Steve.
Love the show, as always. Real quick, I'll try and go fast, but I wanted to talk about the retired numbers. I'll put it in a perspective of a 25-year-old Mets fan. You know, I never got to see Tom Seaver, been told stories about Tom Seaver, and every time I get to go to Citi Field, I see 41 up in the rafters. And I think it would be a disservice to the entire franchise to even have a connotation around possibly unretiring numbers. It's the whole duty, I would say, to the fan base and what's come before you at the franchise to be passed down. You know, I'm going to tell my kids about number 5 and David Wright, and it's going to be the same connotation as you pass it down and pass it down. I'm not even a Yankees fan, but I think unretiring any one of those legends numbers would be ludicrous, and we shouldn't even have this connotation of players asking former players for their numbers.
When did it become? It's a great point, Steve. When did it become a thing that it was even a thought to be okay? Like, how are we even at that point? I don't understand it.